And, you know, obviously if you got drum mics, et cetera, in play, you know, there are little things, little bitty moves that you need to pay attention to when adding these mics together to make sure they are what? In phase, right? I've got a good input level going on this now, and I've got my fader up around zero, but my master in here is just, it's so loud in the house right now. It's like, well, okay, if that was the case, what would I do here? Where is your choice to go turn it down right now?
Attenuator.
The attenuator? If I do it at the attenuator, what's the negative ramification for that, for the recording?
Gain structure, to a level.
Yeah. Right, because remember, in digital recording for live sound right now, more often than not, that level is dictated by the preamp, the attenuator, right? So that's what's going to drive home this point of how we can creatively use groups here to help us do both recording and live sound, okay? Because we can't mix off the attenuators anymore, because we're going to end up with low bitrate recordings that are not going to sound very good. Okay, I won't go into the whole bitrate discussion here. I'm glad to do it with you offline. I just don't want to eat up the class time doing it. Okay, so if the goal is to have a good input level and also have our fader sitting at the high resolution portion of the throat where I can do some delicate mixing with it, I've got to be able to turn it down somewhere else. How do I do it? Group, okay, I'm going to be specific. Audio group or VCA? Audio group, yes, all right. So what we're gonna do is create a subgroup for that, right? So now, I've got, in terms of gain structure, I've got great input level, so I know I'm gonna get a good recording of it. I've got the input sitting in the high resolution portion of the throw, but I've got an audio subgroup building in an offset for me. Okay, so my master's still sitting at zero, my input faders are still sitting zero-esque, and my input attenuator is giving me great level to the recording. Who thinks that's a measure for success? I think it is, don't you? Yeah, I'm not going to come out and say this is absolutely the right way or the wrong way to do it. I'm just going to push you to try to do this a little bit and try it and see if it applies for you. And that is to start your drum mixes with an overhead drum mic, not an overhead cymbal mic. All right? Treat them as, you know, I like to go XY or ORTF over the kit and use it as a drum microphone, not a cymbal mic. All right, and it's gonna give you a much more natural sounding drum kit if that's what you're looking for. If you're looking for something very, very tight and punchy and clamped down, then maybe the close mics are for you. If it's rap, hip hop, things like that, you know, they're not gonna take advantage of a lot of overhead. But for this kind of music, you know, an overhead drum mic is kind of the way to go, right? It suits the music. So let's just throw up these microphones for a second and just have a listen and see if we think they're in polarity and in phase and all that stuff. Okay, so these are all the microphones have their polarity switch out. You know, this is just as it sits, all right? So let's just push up the faders as a kit and see what they do. Okay, lesson one, class. All right, so you can see I got the kick drums up. I got the snare top up and the snare bottom. Anybody think that sounds good?
No.
Not really. Not really. I'm going to make it sound better with the push of one button. One polarity switch. Who wants to take a guess at which one it is? Snare bottom? How many up for snare bottom? Okay. All right, I'm going to say you might be right. Let's have a listen. Can you see what channel I'm on? Everybody out?
Yeah.
The reason this is having such a dramatic impact on the overall tonality of the snare drum is because we're using the overhead mic as a drum head or as a drum mix. Okay? It's actually the snare top that is essentially out with the overheads. Alright? So, you know, the point of it being, you I don't care if you've mixed on the, you know, mixed on the same kit, you know, over and over again. It's worth checking it, right? Don't take the, don't just kind of go, well, it's snare bottom, so let's push it out of polarity. If you were to actually look at it in terms of waveform, and I actually have the waveforms actually on another session from this, you can clearly see in waveform where the positive action is happening and where the negative action is happening. And you can see that it's a result of the latency or the distance to the overhead that is throwing you out here. Okay? It's not that it's putting it in time. We're not putting it in time. We're just making positive, all positive impulses on the overheads and the snare and the snare bottom, yeah. Okay? So, the point of it being, you know, that didn't take any EQ, didn't take anything like that. It's just our first move. If we hadn't done that, what would be our first move? Try to find some body in the snare drum, right? And, you know, the irony of it is we could have added more and more body, but it's never going to get better, really. What you would end up doing probably, and you might end up doing this just out of the human nature aspect of it, is start EQing the overheads and taking some of that low mid energy out of the overheads. And the irony of it would be as you took it out, it would actually get a little fatter. Right? Because you're removing the out of phase information, the out of time information. Okay? Just my mixing philosophy is, I'll, you know, let you in the door a little bit on it. You know, I think the snare drum is super critical to making your mix really work. It and the bass drum really are so important to get them positioned and weighted properly in your mix. And I see a lot of guys really mishandle this. I got to tell you, I'm not afraid to say that one. You know, I'm kind of on this crusade, if you will, certainly with a lot of mixers that I know, to try to get them to rethink this a little bit. Dave Stegel, are you in the room? Not to point you out. He was an example of somebody that I kind of put this approach to, and I think he really gravitated to it and really grabbed onto it and has kind of done really well with it. And that is the concept of low end versus bottom end. Okay? Low end versus bottom end. Because subs take care of all the bottom end, I think we have a tendency to rely on them way, way too much to add weight to our instrumentation. Okay, especially for bass drum, bass guitar. You know, usually if somebody wants the bass drum to be bigger, what do? Turn up the subs. And it's like, man, please be careful. You know, I mean, you're really missing a very, very important part of that bass drum, and especially that snare drum musically. Right? They've got to sit in the same weight in the mix. Okay, we're going to go create some upwards compression. Do this very quickly. What I've done is created a second subgroup that's going to handle this process for us. Let's just do some EQ. Let's do some cool guy EQ. What we're going to do here is try to get, you know, this is a workflow that's existed in studios and works on records. Every record you've heard probably in the last 20 years, 30 years has had this technique probably used on it in some way, shape, or form. And it's a fantastic workflow to have at your disposal in live sound if you can do it. And it's basically called, there are all kinds of names for it, New York compression, upwards compression, parallel compression. It's all synonymous. It's the same thing. What it is taking regular uncompressed information, compressing it down heavily, relatively heavily, and adding it right back in with the uncompressed signal. Okay? Now you can definitely overdo this. Don't get me wrong, you don't want to necessarily do this on every input. I think it's probably the most effective on drums in our world. That's where it has the biggest impact on live sound. So why do we do this? Okay? Here's the reason we do it. Because we're going to base our level a lot of times out of the PA of the drums, really based on the peak information off of those drum inputs. Right? If it's got a lot of peakiness into it, which almost all drums do, cymbals have a good leading edge, etc., it's not going to allow us to get them kind of big and fat unless we shave that element off of it to try to get the lower mid portion of it up in the mix, right? Everybody following me there? So our choice is to either take all that peak information off that we actually like in the drum and compress it at the input side and try to turn it all up, or leave that there and add a compressed version to it back up underneath it. And what you're going to find, you'll hear this, it's pretty dramatic, is that what you get some big, big pluses from this. You get incredible headroom in your console and your PA because the drums are essentially going to sound about three times louder, and you're going to notice that the input or the output meters don't really even move. They don't really change. All right? So, and it also gives you the ability to tonally affect the kit very quickly and get some big, some cool drum processing happening. Okay, so let me stop talking and do it. So let's have a listen to Uncompressed. See it here. Actually, I'll get to this meter so you can see it, because here's really the cool thing.
You're doing the whole kit.
What's that?
That's not like you're not doing the snare and doing the
No, that's on the group. That's on the group.
Wow.
All right, so what I want you to take note of here is watch the output metering over here, okay? So you see what I'm getting at?
What?
Yo, what? Right? So the PA just appears to have way more fidelity immediately. I mean, we haven't done any work here yet, guys, right? But all of a sudden, now we appear to have twice as much PA as we have, and we have moved the output meter. Pretty cool? Okay, it gets better. I'm not a fan of gating the snare top. I like to hear what the drummer's doing gate or grace note-wise, but I'm not opposed to doing the snare bottom. So let's get one on there and set it up accordingly. As it sits right now, what's opening the gate? The bottom snare mic, right? It's just being fed into the detector circuit and opening it up. Well, what do you say we take the snare top mic and actually have it open up the gate?
Can't be done.
Can't be done, Sam. Can't be done. That way, anything he's doing grace note-wise, anything on top of that snare, if he comes really down dynamically, it's still going to open up the gate and give us some presence there, right? We can do that very easily in visual consoles. We just say key in and choose snare top. All right, now let's check this out, because this is really cool. And you know, I know I only got a few minutes. I'm probably actually over time here. So, but you know, one of the cool things in digital consoles, and this I'll put on my Avid hat here for a little bit, is that we get to use topologies like this style of equalizer. And really, this is kind of new to the live sound world. Most guys really don't get exactly what this is and what it can do for you. But it's a very different style of equalizer than what you would see on a strip equalizer. I'll explain it very quickly here. If you notice what you have a boost on the top left knob and an attenuation on the right knob and one frequency select. Now you're saying to yourself, self, why is it one frequency but I can boost and attenuate at the same time? It has to do with the slope rates and the actual frequency selection of those filters. It's actually by design. Okay, same thing applies on the right. We got a boost and an attenuation, but there we have a choice of frequency for the boost and a choice for the attenuation. And what this allows you to do, this is tone shaping in and of itself. When we talk about the word tone shaping, this is what we're talking about. It is very gross, big, I don't mean gross as in ugly, I just mean gross as in big moves that can tighten things up and make them sound very musical. This is from the radio age. This whole mindset is from the radio age. All right, so check this out. I've just got that equalizer on there, and I'm going to do some EQing. All right, so here's your, and this is just on the compressed kit, okay? So listen to the effects of this. I'm going to take one of these frequencies, I'm not sure which yet, and kind of boost it and cut it at the same time. To achieve that kind of tone shaping with a regular input strip EQ. Okay, there's a reason we have those things. There's a reason that they sold for $250 a channel in 1954, and they're about $3,000 a channel now. Okay, they're very difficult to emulate, and we don't really have that kind of shaping capability here. Right? That's why the plug-in architecture is really, really cool to have at your disposal. Okay, that's one reason. All right, harmonically, I'm just adding some tape saturation emulation here, just again, just to kind of beef it up and make it sound a little more analog. So, One last thing, and then I'll go. Let's put a little space on this, just because we can. All right, so I've just got a really tight, compressed room on here, and we've closed it down on it, but I want you to try to grasp what it's doing to your perception of the snare sound. Okay, and it's, believe it or not, right now it's on the kick, snare, toms, everything. Even a little bit of overheads in there. But listen, I'll take it on and take it off and just try to lock in the snare drum. It's really noticeable there on what it's doing to your perception of the snare, and tell me if you don't think it sounds more produced. Okay? That's a dry drum. Think about what we've done here. I mean, we've just very minimal EQ on the drum kit here, right? But just using the tools, using, you know, compression, maybe some harmonic enhancement, etc., just a little bit of processing, we've made that drum kit sound produced. Are you buying into it?
Yeah.
So I know we could be here for hours talking about this stuff. I mean, mixing, you know, you're not gonna learn it in one day. But please try to get, you know, if I had to encourage you to do anything, please try to get to a position in your services, et cetera, where you're thinking, mixing, and emphasizing and even exaggerating movement so we can hear the parts. You know, a guitar player, he's speaking the word through his guitar. Please let us hear it. Right? Okay? That's all I got for you. I think I better stop there. Scott's going to be back. Thank you for coming. If you want to reach out to me, I'm glad to answer questions, whatever you want. Mr. Chansey knows this well. You can reach me on Facebook. You can reach me on Facebook for Venue Live Sound Environment. You can reach me on my personal Facebook, etc. So just reach out to me if you have questions or you want clarification on any of this later. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.